The student who was expelled that you just mentioned said, literally all I'm looking for here at college is just to find a co-founder for my companies and a wife. That's it. And so, yeah, like maybe you get some relationships out of it because you're there with a bunch of other people who are just acknowledging the fact that it's transactional. But really, all you're there for is to just get the check marks, get the little section that you put on your resume that says that you have a degree, and then you move on.
Welcome back to the Be Unbound podcast. I'm your co-host, Jonathan Brush.
And I'm your co-host, David Rethemeyer.
And this is the last episode for the year. In fact, this will air on New Year's Eve. We're recording it a little before then. And we hope that you've had a wonderful 2025. We've had a remarkable 2025. David, some of it has been wonderful. Some of it has been kind of awful.
It's been a ride.
And so I'm not entirely sure what I want to hope for the new year. There's some things that we are looking back on and counting our blessings. And there's some things we look back on and go, whew, that was something. And we've learned a lot. And I suspect that you have something similar. So as we finish the year, we hope that you enjoy this last podcast. It's a re-air of one that we did before, talking about college students and becoming human AI assistants. You know, AI was certainly a dominant theme in 2025. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a big theme in 2026. And it's something we spend a lot of time thinking about and trying to think about from a perspective that is not entirely critical, but also not entirely acceptable, noting that there's a little bit of both in there. And this episode was one that was pretty popular that we were trying to wrestle through some of that. And we hope it's helpful for you to hear again or to hear for the first time. And we just wish you a wonderful, happy new year. And a wonderful 2026 coming. Welcome back to the Be Unbound podcast. I'm your co-host, Jonathan Brush.
And I'm your co-host, David Rethemeyer.
And we are delighted to be back in the studio. It's been a little gap since we've been here because we've been doing some really fun stuff. We were at Capstone, which is our final live event for the Unbound year, which we might talk about in a separate episode. We had an absolutely fantastic event. The only thing I complain about was it was slightly bittersweet because we have so many great students who are going on to their next thing, which means that we're super proud of them, but we're going to miss them a lot. Mm-hmm. So it's like this kind of weird, it's like a parental thing, right? I mean, they're doing exactly what they're supposed to do. It worked exactly the way we wanted it to. We're so proud of them and so excited to see where they go. And yet we'd really love to see them.
You're going off and doing the next thing. That's amazing. But also you're going, and that means you're not here and we don't get to hang out with you.
And we have to preach to ourselves because we tell our students all the time, you can't live here. And then we say goodbye to them. We're like, darn, we wish you lived here. So anyhow, we just had a really, really great trip. We're in the middle of our travel season. So David and I are about to swap coasts. We're on the same coast now. I just came from California. Dave was heading to California. And so it's been a fun time. But in the middle of all that, the head of our learning department, Victoria Scherter, who's been on this podcast many times, recently shared an article with our team from the Bookbinder Substack, hilarious Bookbinder Substack, and we'll definitely have the link in the show notes. This is, David, an utterly depressing
I don't know how else to say it.
You should definitely, dear listener, read this. This is comments, excuse me, that's not the comments one, there's that one too, but The Average College Student Today is the name of the Substack article. And it's by a PhD, a philosophy professor. He said he's been a professor for over 30 years. And then he goes on to describe his classroom at what he describes as sort of a run-of-the-mill average state school. I cannot put into words how utterly depressing his analysis of his class is, although it's written fairly by somebody who clearly loves his students and is not, or at least trying hard to battle against being cynical. David, mm-hmm. that prompted you to do a lot of additional research and turned up a bunch of articles I've been reading. And so tell us a little bit about what you found.
Yeah, well, before we move on too far past that article, just a couple of highlights from that article that I just think are, if anything, going to hopefully make our listeners more likely to go through and read it because it is worth reading, is that he just breaks down several different categories of how college students today are just massively, massively different than they have been typically. And as you mentioned, Jonathan, he acknowledges at the beginning, like, hey, this is potentially something I acknowledge that there's a bunch of, you know, people who are just saying, going to point at this and say, oh, this is just an old guy just saying, kids these days. Well, he says that's fair, but also just it's hard to ignore some of these things when some of the quotes are, most students are functionally illiterate in that they are not able to just sit down and actually comprehend the meaning behind most modern Pulitzer Prize winning books that are coming out today. He says their writing skills are at the eighth grade level. And he even gives some examples of it, of how when students don't attempt to use AI, how abysmal some of their writing and grammar skills are. And then when they do use AI, it is not too terribly hard to tell that it is AI. And we'll get to AI here in a second, because that's the other main thing we want to talk about. But just the fact that there's chronic absenteeism, they can't sit in a seat for more than 50 minutes without actually being able to use their phone or their laptop. And they want everything summarized, essentially. So it's just this very strong feeling of students are extremely checked out. And this is reinforced even further by this article that I found from New York Magazine called Rampant AI Cheating is Ruining Education Alarmingly Fast. It's an article by James Walsh, and it is just a potentially even more depressing look at the prevalence.
It's almost sickening. I mean,
truly, it's at the prevalence of AI in even major universities. Like we're talking about, like there's
Ivy League universities in particular. I mean, like you almost singled out Ivy League universities.
So. Yeah. There's a very extensive example of a student at Columbia University who, by the way, Columbia University partners with OpenAI, which is just a fascinating thing that the higher education universities are partnering with the technology that is quite likely going to be a significant portion of their downfall, which I just think is fascinating. And just goes on, and there's so many examples of how students are just talking about how even the students who are more hesitant to just blatantly use AI, that and they enjoy writing, they say, well, but even then, it's hard to not use AI when it just makes so much of the busy work and the hard, like, assignments so much easier. And it's hard to look at this. And especially when there are multiple examples of teachers who are just saying, I just can't wait until, like, retire and just be out of this education environment where I don't have to deal with AI anymore and teach students who are using it.
Yeah, I think, you know, the picture that's presented by both of these is that in the first article, there's a picture of a broad section of the student populace that is totally unprepared to academically perform at the school, but maybe more terrifying, has zero interest in doing it. One of his biggest indictments here is he said that it's a transactional situation. Mm-hmm. That the quote here is, the average student has seen college as basically transactional for as long as I've been doing this. They go through the motions and maybe learn something along the way, but it's all in service to the only conception of the good life they can imagine, a job with middle-class wages. And so that's, you know, that's not news to us. That was part of the reason I fled traditional higher education coming on 15 years ago, because I saw some of this, but the scale of it is pretty stunning. And then you combine that with the second article that David talks about that basically states that students think not using AI to cheat on almost every conceivable part of college is insane. Now, to be fair to Columbia, they did suspend and then I think expel the student in question. But this student was blatantly cheating on everything with AI. And basically, the reporter went through and interviewed a bunch of students and could find none of them who really could come up with an excuse for why they wouldn't want to use AI to cheat on all their assignments. And then you have professors basically saying that this is an almost impossible defense to try to, mm-hmm. to clean this up. Mm-hmm. So I think, David, you and I were talking, and things that struck me was that I had two kind of simultaneous back-to-back thoughts here. And before we go into this, I want our listeners to understand there is a danger here that this will sound like a sort of self-centered bragging or a reflection on Unbound. It is not a bragging or reflection. What is a reflection? It's not a bragging. I'm not using it as a poster child here for, you know, why you should do Unbound against other colleges. I'd be happy to make that argument, but that's not my point here. But there's something that is really stunning here that I can't quite figure out. And David, maybe you and I can talk about this a little bit. So mm-hmm. my first initial reaction was like, this is insane. I cannot, you know, having gone to traditional college myself, this doesn't have any semblance of, you know, there was certainly people unmotivated in my college that thought it was transactional. But my experience much more mirrored the professors, which makes sense. He's older than I am, but not by much. And so then certainly students. And so just the state of higher education was really depressing. But here's the second thing that had me just completely scratching my head. David, we don't experience any of these same problems in our educational environment. Now, we'd love to tell you that's because we had all the same problems coming in and we magically fixed them with our kids. And that's just not the case. Our students come in without these problems, which certainly makes our job tremendously easier and atmosphere really great. But that's a very interesting observation. And I'll give one specific example. I believe in the second article, David, that you referenced, they talked about the fact that almost every student in their courses used a laptop to take notes. Mm-hmm. And then if you reverse the room and you're looking from the back of the room, very few of them were actually using a laptop to make notes. Most of them are using laptops. Gambling is a very popular thing. There's lots of reports of people actually viewing pornography in classrooms. You know, social media is obviously a big thing. In other words, you have people taking notes on laptops, which I think is a little suspect from a neurological learning standpoint anyhow. And then they're actually not taking notes. They're using laptops to basically do something else while they're just present in the lecture hall. That's contrasted to we just came from Capstone. I was in the back of the room for many, many presentations. We have very, very few students who use laptops at all. The ones who are using laptops are actually taking notes. Mm-hmm. And typically in our room, we're at like 97% written note takers on any given lecture. And keep in mind, listeners, the lectures at our live events are not lectures that they're going to be tested on later. This is not necessarily part of their academics. This is just content. And they're taking notes because they want to retain it. That contrast was really startling to me, David, and has had me kind of scratch my head a little bit about that. You mentioned that you had some thoughts on that.
Yeah, I have several things. One part that you mentioned earlier that I think is one of the key things is the fact that traditional higher education is extremely transactional at this point. Really, students are not actually going there to learn. They're not going there to better themselves as people. They are going there because going to college and graduating with a degree is just a step in getting you towards what you mentioned earlier was getting a middle-class job with decent wages. Is that it's just, it's not about college itself anymore. It's what the degree gets you that is past college. And college is just a stepping stone that doesn't actually matter in and of itself. People aren't actually looking to get anything, any sort of learning, any sort of development out of college, except potentially some friendships. The student who was expelled that you just mentioned said, literally all I'm looking for here at college is just to find a co-founder for my companies and a wife. That's it. And so, yeah, like maybe you get some relationships out of it because you're there with a bunch of other people who are just acknowledging the fact that it's transactional. But really, all you're there for is to just get the check marks, get the little section that you put on your resume that says that you have a degree, and then you move on. That's not what we do at Unbound. Yes, we have part of our SEND Higher Education Alternative Program. You can get higher education credits. But most of our students aren't coming in just to get something transactional. They're not coming in just so that they can get a degree, just so that they can get a job. They're coming in because we have a program that they recognize provides them with actual value that will allow them to grow as individuals, that will give them information that is genuinely going to be helpful and applicable to them, and is actually beneficial for them to engage with actively. And I think there's probably failure on both sides, on the academia and on just our culture and how just our young people look at educational opportunities in general. But I think that just in this particular situation, it just goes to show how much trust has been lost in our higher education institutions, in that even in Ivy League universities like Columbia, students don't trust them to give them valuable information. Students don't trust them to help them to grow, to be better, more well-rounded, more career-prepared people. They only trust them to give them a degree that is more likely to get them a job.
Well, they think it's more likely to get them a job. Yeah, I think that the real tragedy here is the lack of purpose of these institutions. We can trace this, and this is stuff that we've been talking about for years, and it's not original to us by any means. But, you know, you can trace this back to a post-World War II GI Bill world where the government came into heavily subsidizing higher education. Higher education has used those dollars primarily to bring in more dollars, not necessarily to increase their academic quality, which is a fairly human reaction. And so you have a lot of dollars going. There's some wild examples of schools that have more administrators than students and, you know, other kinds of crazy things like that. And so you have this kind of weird rotating wheel, but it all was predicated on this idea that a college degree was a rare enough and valuable enough credential that it actually did give you an entrance to the job market. We've spent a lot of time talking even on this podcast about how that's just a dead idea. Mm-hmm. There's just no evidence for that whatsoever. And in fact, you know, you would read these articles and you would say the last person I would want to hire would be a college graduate, because it's likely, here's the wild thing, you know, if the AI use, the AI cheating use is as rampant on all college campuses as it is on these Ivy League campuses that this reporter was talking about, you actually have a situation where if you sent a child to college, and I'm an employer, right? So I'm looking at this and I'm going, so basically you're telling me that any person that I would want to hire that has a traditional degree almost certainly was saturated in an environment where all of their peers told them that the only way to actually be successful was to use AI to cheat. And so there's very little chance that I don't have somebody who's already had it inculcated into them to A, use AI to do the thinking for them so they don't have original thinking, and B, to do that in a ethically suspect way so they're already compromised. Just, in other words, they spent 4 years of almost certainly being indoctrinated and compromised ethically, and now that I'm trying to employ them. That's mm-hmm. the part that I'm finding quite fascinating in a sort of dark type of way, which is, you know, we're now looking at a situation where going to a college is likely institutionalizing students in such a way as to kill and actually disrupt and destroy the kind of values that college is reportedly instilling in their mm-hmm. and
yeah.
their
yeah.
students.
Well, even in the New York Magazine article itself, I'm just going to read this quote here, that this is Professor Jane, a computer science lecturer at Berkeley, has been using these questions to attempt to reason with his students. If you're handing in AI work, he tells them, you're not actually anything different than a human assistant to an artificial intelligence engine. And that makes you very easily replaceable. Why would you keep anyone around? And that's not theoretical. The COO of a tech research firm just recently asked Jane, this professor, why he needed programmers any longer, which is just a complete 180 of the conventional wisdom that has come up over the last like 10, 15 years of, oh, go into software development, go into computer programming. There's going to be jobs like that forever. Now, is just because of the fact that what's interesting is now the question is, can we actually get real programmers, or are we going to just be getting people who know how to prompt ChatGPT for programming?
Well, but there's an idea before that that's even more important, and this is maybe the crux of what we're trying to say here, is that, okay, so it may be true that artificial intelligence now can program mm-hmm. for programmers are necessary. I don't know that's rough of your programmer, but I don't know if the grand scheme of things, if that means that a lot of people didn't have to learn a lot of redundant and difficult and sometimes tedious code, if that's necessarily a bad thing, if we also set that to an AI. The problem here is that if you go to a traditional college, you'll be trained in such a way that you are, to David's words, quoting from the article here, you are the assistant to a human assistant to an AI. Mm-hmm. The question is, who's the person who's going to be using their intellect and curiosity and intelligence to figure out what programs the AI should be developing? It won't be the people that went to a school that spent all their time being the assistant to the AI. And mm-hmm. that's something that's really, really interesting to look at.
Because what are they going to do? They're just going to ask AI to prompt them for what sort of AI developments should be next.
If you're listening to this, you may not use AI a lot, but I have a suspicion, based on my own personal failings, that you likely watch YouTube. And if you start to watch YouTube a little bit, you'll start to watch YouTube a lot bit. And if you start to watch YouTube after a while, I find that what happens is that instead of going to YouTube with a curiosity, I'd like to learn about this, I tend to view what the algorithm sends me, and I become a receptor rather than a creator. Like I'm recreationally using the viewing that comes in. I'm not using YouTube as this phenomenal source to go to and say, I need to, and I do occasionally, but you know, when I first started watching YouTube, it was like, this is amazing. I've always been curious how this works, and now I can actually watch it and see it, and how amazing is that? And then mm-hmm. after a little addiction sets in, it's like, well, I'll click on this. Oh, 3 minutes, that's too long. And so I'm watching more and more two-minute videos on things that the algorithm thinks I'm interested in, and maybe I am sort of, but they're not really enhancing my life or developing in any way. The same could be said for somebody who goes through college, is surrounded by people that encourage you to cheat, are surrounded by this complacency, this transactional nature, so that professors you try can't, because the overwhelming majority of their students are not interested in learning. And so you've got a really bad poisonous environment. And then you're going to come out into the workplace, A, with not any skills, but worse, without any of the real development that allow you to do the kind of deep thinking that now AI can help make possible. So here's the tragedy, right? AI, I can't program, but a world is coming soon where it's quite possible that I could develop software because I can have these great ideas and then get AI to write the code for me. But we're producing people who aren't even capable of having the ideas, even though something's out there to write the code. Mm-hmm. That's a tremendous tragedy. And also, at the same time, a tremendous opportunity for students like the ones we get in Unbound, who, for whatever reasons, don't seem to be infected by this cultural, this epidemic, right? I mean, they tend to be curious. They tend to care. They have extremely high standards of ethics, and they actually engage deeply in the learning process.
Traditional education doesn't work for everyone. If you or your student wants something different, check out Ascend by Unbound. With flexible courses, real-world projects, mentorship, and community, Ascend equips young adults to thrive academically, professionally, and personally. Students consistently say that the close-knit support and resume-ready experience are their favorite parts. Enrollment prices rise soon, so don't wait. Find your track at beunbound.us/ascend. It's really important that we mention that our content, like all of the sessions that we give, all of the content that we present, any speaker that we bring in, we try to make sure that it's very intentionally tailored to what kind of feedback we receive from our student body, what they're thinking about, what kinds of needs we're observing in our students, what kinds of things they're grappling with. And so we're not just out here trying to make sure that our students are just getting stuffed, their heads are getting stuffed full of information. We're trying to make sure that we are giving them the information that's going to help them in the long term to grow as individuals and really to be able to then go and help others in their communities to grow. Because as we've talked about many times on the podcast, ultimately the center of all of this, the center of being able to thrive, is that it's in the context of community that we're able to do this. And I think that's even something that, to an extent, the college student that got expelled was recognizing, is that, hey, one of the very few things that college is worthwhile for me is that I can find a couple of important relationships. Now, he was looking at it from a very transactional perspective. He was not really looking at it in a healthy way at all. But even in a broken sense, there's still a recognition that, hey, relationship is important. And so that's something that we center our entire program around, is trying to foster as much of that relationship and helping our students to have the skills they need to foster that for as long as they're in the program and for long after they're in their program.
So let's take a macro view out here and think about this in some ways that I hope is helpful for all of our listeners, regardless of where you are and what you're thinking about for educational options and those things. And this would be true if you're, somebody's looking at going into a higher education program or something like Unbound, or if you're just listening to this for other reasons. So we talk about this podcast being a guide for practical Christian living. And so as Christians, I think there's some important things to think about here. So first of all, recognize this. We had a public school system that by and large is very much an answers-based system, which means that it teaches to a specific set of standardized tests that are very rigid and unable to adapt to the cultural changes that happen, and that through a whole series of circumstances have been dumbed down and reduced to the point that they have very little functional information in them. And if that sounds offensive or maybe too blunt, I would just point you to absolutely just, tons of information and studies and research that shows this in a whole bunch of different ways. So I'm making that less as an argument and less as a statement of fact. And if you want to come at us in the comments or something, let us know. But because I think we're pretty unassailable on that. Okay. So when you take that situation and then you have folks who then don't have a strong working knowledge of context, how the world works, and have just basic information, and that information is answers based in such a way, then two other factors are coming in here that are absolutely really devastating. The first is social media, right? So you have a massive distraction that degrades attention span and that really distorts the human condition and what is valuable and all those kinds of things. So you see a just reduction of ability because of the instant gratification of social media. Now, we could talk about that in a whole bunch of different ways, from the dopamine addict type effect that it has, so the neurological stuff that it does, to just the fact that, you know, the lowest common denominator of human relationships here, you know, the great engine of technology in the internet is pornography. And that's an ugly thing to say, but that's also a true thing to say. And so you have those kinds of factors at work. And now you're taking those folks, you're pushing them into an academic system that has inflated and become bloated in terms of its costs, while its quality has decreased, and has become forcibly become transactional because the cost is so high that in many ways, the only reason you would go is if you think you're getting something out of it. But because of the forces we talked about in the high school, you know, public school type of thing, where it's very, you know, dumbed down, all those kinds of things, you have a situation where colleges almost are under pressure to pass students and reduce the academic workload that they have because they're charging students such a colossal fee. And so it becomes less of an educational center and more of a degree mill. We need, you know, you paying us this money, we give you this this certification, this credential, and we're going to wrap some experiences around it. You know, you're going to live in a dorm, have some sports, which now are completely corrupted because of gambling and, you know, students making money, all those kinds of things. It's a whole different subject there. And you know, there's less and less quality there. Now, into that cauldron, we just throw this explosive, which is AI. So now you can get the certification that you're paying massive amounts of money for, and you don't really have to do any of the work. All you have to do is feed the information in. And there's this crazy quote in one of these articles where they said, you know, students are now creating their content with AI that they're turning in for their papers and their assignments. And professors are asking, well, if they're not going to work on it, why should I spend all my time grading it? So they're actually finding AIs to grade it. Now, just think about the absolute bizarreness of that. So you've got a bunch of people paying a bunch of money where AIs are actually feeding the information into a professor that's using an AI to feed information back out. Both the professors and the students have become human assistants to the AI, and they're all doing it in ivied walls that cost, you know, just breathtaking amounts of money. Okay, if that's a dystopian, depressing picture, we didn't invent it. We've observed it, and we've gotten it from these articles. Now, I point that out not to depress everybody, although it is depressing, and we ought to all be a little depressed. It's tragic what's happening here, and there's going to be broken lives and broken dreams because of this. I'm setting it up because it's so important to understand the contrast, right? What's the other side of that? Well, the other side of that is things that we just thought were normal until yesterday. Work ethic, values, cheating is bad, critical thinking is good, ask questions, knowledge is worth it for knowledge's sake alone, learning's a good thing, it's exciting to be curious. I mean, all these kinds of things, right? And here's the good news. Those things did not become extinct. They're just as accessible as they were before. But you have to realize that they're not celebrated on a cultural level anymore. So here's the kind of radical challenge that I'm pushing out to you. If you want your child to excel, if you want to excel as an individual, if you want to be excel as a young person, you're going to have to do things that were normal until yesterday. And in order to do the normal since yesterday things, you're going to have to be radically countercultural. The good news is the payoff is going to be enormous. You are going to rocket to the head of almost anything that you do because you're going to be one of the few people that has real skills and they're not an AI assistant. But it's not going to be easy. You're going to have to pick countercultural things to do. This isn't a big surprise for most of our listeners who are homeschoolers and who are Christian and who pick alternative education paths after high school. But this is not just like a nice thing to do. This is going to be an essential thing to do if you want to not become a bot's assistant. And if that sounds unusually grim, go to the show notes, click on these articles and read them and see what you think.
Well, and really, it should feel like a no-brainer to try to go about it in this way, because not only are these students going to end up with very bleak career prospects where they're just, yeah, human assistants to AI engines that are extremely replaceable and therefore have bleak career prospects, but it also just generally, when you go about life that way, it ends up being very depressing when you try to just look at everything transactionally. There's a reason that the upcoming generation is reporting higher and higher and higher rates of depression and severe anxiety, is that when you look at life purely transactionally like that, that's what happens, is that then you look at every situation, you look at every relationship in your life as transactional, and man, the amount of blessing that you miss out on when you look at other human beings as just a way to get something out of them as a transaction, and you miss out on just the depth of just enjoying other people and the blessing that community is. Man, if you can give your young adults, if you can give your students an appreciation of that, then they're going to be able to super easily look at all of their peers, look at the way they're going about things, look at the transactional viewpoint that they have of everything and go, why on earth would I go and do that? Why would I live life that way? Sure, maybe I have to do things, quote unquote, the hard way a little bit more often. Maybe I have to work and learn this thing the hard way when I know AI could do it for me just for the sake of learning it. But that's going to mean that I'm a more well-rounded, more resilient person who's able to actually relate to others when they're going through hard things that can't be solved by AI. AI can't solve all of the world's problems, counter to what the higher education system is promoting at this point.
It can't solve your deepest problems. AI is lousy for a broken heart. And if you think that's wrong, look at the amount of AI bad advice out there that's led people to really stupid things. I couldn't agree with you more, David. And I want to leave this on a positive note for our listeners. This is depressing, and this is dystopian, and this has implications for all of us. And so I don't want to downplay that. But I also want to say that a culture's decline is optional for an individual. Now you're going to have to deal with some of the fallout of it, and I'm not saying you can avoid it entirely. But I'm also saying that it is not necessary. It is optional to participate in the bad parts of our culture. And you can exercise not to use that option. And I've used this example tons and tons of times. I just used it when I was speaking in California last week. I've used it for our students. You know, if you need an example of this, take a look at our Amish or Mennonite brothers and sisters, your plain clothes. You know, they have decided to opt out of all this. And you know, what measure are you going to use here? Financial success, they've got it. You know, generational success, they've got it. Family order, they've got it. Are they perfect? No, not in any way, shape, or form. I'm not making any argument. I'm not defending that lifestyle. I'm not defending the theology behind it. I'm merely stating that there are swaths of people in our country who opt out of what we think all of think is absolutely essential. And by many, many measures, they thrive, which means you have the ability, the capability, the option to opt out of these things that don't make sense for you and for your children. And doing so is one small but absolutely essential step to rebuilding a better culture and to help those who got caught in this dystopian mess, right? So it's not just essential for your family and for your children, for you individually to say, no, I'm not going to participate in AI cheating. I'm not going to outsource myself to a robot. I am going to think creatively. I'm going to participate in this. I'm going to seek knowledge for knowledge's sake and for learning more about the truth. I'm going to pursue a questions-based paradigm. I'm going to celebrate community. I'm going to do all those things. That's essential for you. It's also essential because we're going to have to create these islands and harbors and fortresses where people outside caught up in this maelstrom are going to go, wait, I want to be there. And we're going to throw the doors open, turn lights on, and say, get over here. It's way better over here. And that's the option. That's the calling. That's the opportunity that we have. And so, you know, let's end this on this positive note. Yes, these are some depressing things. No, you don't have to participate. Knowing about them is half the battle. And then there are options like Unbound and like other things. We're not the only game in town, right? But there's ways to do this differently. And, you know, as evidence, David and I can just point to Capstone, right? Mm-hmm. We just got back from Capstone.
Oh, man.
Voracious learners, wildly intelligent, curious people, phenomenal community, so much fun to be around, so many shared experiences, so much shared conversation, depth of conversation, development. It's just, it's amazing. And even more so in contrast to what you see every place else.
Yeah. The thing that stood out to me the most was just the, infectious hope that is just you could not be in that room without feeling that, especially just so much like it permeated. If this was something that obviously we as staff try to facilitate, but there's really only so much we can do to just set the students up to be able to have that. And that was just something that you just felt in student conversations as you were hearing some of their stories when they were sharing some of their experiences and the hope that they have found and just how excited they are to share that with each other. And man, if you want some encouragement, just know that we just came back from a place where there was 80 young adults who were all just contagiously excited about how hopeful they were for their future. And if that doesn't make you hopeful, I don't know what will.
It's a choice, and it's one you can exercise. And by God's grace and with his strength, we're going to able to do something different. And in doing so, reach out to those who are caught up in some bad ideas who are going to be looking for alternatives in the future. So thanks so much for coming along on, I think, an important conversation. I really just can't encourage you enough. Go to our show notes and read these articles. They're really, really, really important. They're a really important perspective to have. And then, you know, hear us clearly when we're talking about hope and an ability to choose that. There is exciting times and a real need and a real purpose ahead for all of us. Well, it's the end of 2025. It has been an interesting 25 years of the new millennium for me, and it's also been an interesting past 12 months. David, any closing thoughts at the end of the year from a Be Unbound podcast perspective?
Oh, man. I just wanted to say thank you to everyone who has been tuning in consistently. We have had by far the most listeners this year than we've ever had. We have seen some tremendous growth, and we've been really grateful for that. This is something that I think I can speak for both Jonathan and myself and say that this is a part of our work. But in reality, a lot of the times, this is one of the things that is involved in our jobs that we just have the most fun with. And it's just fun to sit down for conversations and to think out loud through things and to enjoy that and then to share it with you all and to hear feedback from you guys. And so we will be trying to carry that forward and making the 2026 episodes that we'll be coming out with even better. We are going to be kicking it off with a pretty fantastic guest coming up for next week's episode. You are not going to want to miss out on that. But we hope that we will be following it up with even better and better episodes. And so, again, just thank you all for an amazing 2025, and we will be honored to have you continue listening to us this coming year.
You know, we say this sometimes when we speak in live audiences, and we'll say it here as well. There's a tremendous privilege of being in this position that we would record these podcasts and you would listen to them. Honestly, it makes no sense for us to record them if you don't listen to them, and so we're grateful for that. But, you know, from a speaker perspective, from a podcaster perspective, recording these podcasts every week makes David and I have to think about things that are important, and we have to do research on things that are important, and we have to make contacts with people who are important and ask them to come on as guests and try to make sure that we research the topics in such a way that we can bring you something of value. We endeavor to do that, and we hope and pray that it has been of value to you. It has helped you in giving you information and giving you perspective and giving you some ways to really understand things that are true and practically apply those things in your life. But it's also a tremendous advantage for us. It's the pressure point that we need every week to learn, to get better, to dig into things, and to see the numbers grow so much this past year, to have the feedback from many of you who have contacted us and told us what you liked and sometimes what you didn't. That's a tremendous privilege and one that we don't take for granted. So from the bottom of our hearts, we wish you a wonderful new year, and we just give you so much thanks, and we're so grateful for the attention and the time that you gave us this past year. And as David mentioned, we're endeavoring to make that even better in the year to come, starting with a fantastic guest that we know you're going to like because you've liked it before. So, happy new year. Here's to a wonderful 2026. And until we meet again, be unbound.
Hi, my name is Chloe Siever. I just finished my Ascend Foundations year, and I'm starting my challenge year. I remember when I first started Ascend, I had just graduated high school and I was very confused on what my next steps were going to look like and how I was going to take the things that I was passionate about and turn them into a career one day. So going into Ascend, I did not know anybody. I had no friends, no one I knew had done it. And so it was a very new thing for me, kind of an intimidating thing, honestly, doing something with people that you do not know, with a program you're not super familiar with. But I did it, and I can say now, after being in it for one full year, it has been the most amazing thing ever. The relationships that I've made, the friendships that have formed, are some of the strongest that I think I've had in my entire life. Everyone is just so easy to talk to and genuine, and that was something that was really new to me. I've never had a lot of friends or even made friends very quickly, and so that was something that was just so inspiring to me and really inspired me to want to be that kind of person for people in my local community. And I've already seen how those relationships that I have built through Ascend have impacted the relationships I have in my local community and how I treat them. And so that's been a super cool personal thing that I've seen growth in and just gain a lot of wisdom from. And again, best friendships I've had. Professionally, I've had so many cool opportunities coming up with over this last summer. I was in the digital marketing track this year with Ascend, so I got to learn a lot of skills through that, which ultimately led to the opportunity for me to do an internship with a digital marketing business that I'm still doing and will carry into the fall. And so that's just a really cool professional win and really cool opportunities how I've seen how the things that I learned to send can be translated in both professional and personal settings. And just the impact and practical things that can help with are just so amazing. And so, yeah, definitely super cool, very practical, very solid Christian program. And I would say if you're considering doing it, you're not really sure what the outcome will be, I'm here to tell you, you will not regret it. It's just 1 year and you will walk away with some of the best friendships and memories and experiences and opportunities, some of the best ones probably out of your life.